Good afternoon. I'm about to say good morning. I'm going to talk into the mic from there. So my name is Steve Flores. I'm with the Prevention Research Branch in the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention at CDC. And I'm going to talk about eChIP. I'm going to give you a quick fever-paced summary of what the project is, and then we've got three grantees with us, which I'll introduce in a second, to tell you a little bit more detail about what they're doing. So we're going to be pretty fast-paced here. This was the required slide. I'm going to just skip that. Okay. So eChIP was funded right on the heels of the announcement of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. It funded 12 jurisdictions in the U.S. with the highest rates or case numbers of AIDS cases based on 2007, which was the most current data we had at the time. Collectively, they represent 44% of the AIDS epidemic in the country, and these are the jurisdictions listed on the screen. eChIP was a three-year demonstration project, and this slide really just, that's the main takeaway. The other points I'll make about it is it was in two phases. The first phase was an initial planning phase, or a planning phase and an initial implementation phase. And then the remaining 2 years, there was funds were divided to have some funds dedicated to planning and coordination and data reporting, and the majority to further implementation to support. So the eChIP demonstration project was linked to the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. The goals of the strategy were the goals of the demonstration project listed here. If you're in HIV, you've seen these before and should be familiar with them. Reducing new infections, increasing access to care, reducing HIV-related disparities, and the fourth goal of more creating or supporting a more coordinated national response. Guidance that we gave to grantees is most efficiently summarized by these principles up here, so I'll walk through these real quick. First, comprehensive assessment and utilization of all local HIV prevention, care, and treatment resources. So for CDC, we typically focus on prevention, and with the coming of the national strategy and with this demonstration project, we ask grantees to think more broadly than that, to think also about care and treatment and how that can play a role in prevention. And this means working with different people. It means working across funding streams and also focusing on activities at a jurisdiction level. Secondly, directing resources to achieve maximum impact on HIV incidence. We ask that everything in the planning focus on HIV incidence so that it can be linked to how it would reduce HIV incidence, and if it doesn't, that it links to something that that does support reducing HIV incidence, either directly or indirectly, is I think what I'm trying to say. Thirdly, requiring the use of a core set of behavioral, biomedical, and structural interventions that are targeted and scaled to maximize impact. And this really just means not looking at intervention by intervention, but trying to look at collectively at the whole combination of interventions, at a jurisdictional level. How are these all working together to have the most impact in this jurisdiction? And lastly, an increase in data-driven decision-making. We asked jurisdictions use and health departments used all the data available. So this is local epi data, surveillance data, cost, efficacy, anything that you could find that would be relevant so that decisions were justified based on data as much as possible. So that's a quick overview. And with that, I'm going to quickly introduce all three of the panelists, and then they're going to take their turn coming up here to tell you their story. First, from the Bureau of HIV Prevention and Control at New York City's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, Blaine Cutler is going to talk about planning. Then from the AIDS Activities Coordination Office from the Philadelphia Department of Health, Public Health, Coleman Terrell will talk about implementation. And third, from the Population Health Division at San Francisco's Department of Public Health, Tracy Packer will talk about sustainability.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for hanging in there with us. I just want to start, first of all, by thanking the APHA conveners for inviting us, Stephen Flores at CDC for organizing all of us, and to my colleagues Coleman and Tracy for the great work that they're doing in their jurisdictions. I feel as if we've traveled a lot over the past 3 years at various conferences to talk about EACHIP. I feel like we're going to become a rock band soon called the Rock Band EACHIP. So I was just asked to describe in 5 minutes or less how we used EACHIP funding in a new way in New York City to conduct planning with respect to HIV prevention interventions that were taking place on the ground. Okay. So Steve very nicely gave some historical context for the timing in which EACHIP arrived on our doorstep, and I wanted to add some local context. So in addition to the release of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy in the summer of 2010, our New York State legislature, with much education from our health department and support from our community partners, passed a law that same summer mandating the offer of routine HIV screening in most healthcare settings to align with CDC's recommendations. This was a second very large-scale structural change and an opportunity for us in addition to the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. Also in that summer, we had been fortuitously meeting with an academic research team that specialized in modeling to optimize decision-making with respect to public health implementation. And it was just at this time that EACHIP came along. And we saw it as an opportunity to try and bring a more rationalized and scientific approach to decision-making around resource allocation in the area of HIV prevention for the city. Once we were awarded the Phase 1 funding, we entered into a formal partnership with the academic modeling team at NYU, led by Dr. Scott Braithwaite, for this purpose. Many of you may be familiar with modeling in various public health contexts, but just to summarize very briefly what was happening, or what the landscape looked like for modeling with respect to HIV prevention resource allocation in 2010, there had been international models for HIV prevention reported in the peer review literature, such as the Greenwich model in 2009 that many of you might be familiar with, and some early national models such as something called AVERT, and also work conducted by our former, our current health commissioner, Tom Farley, and Deborah Cohen from RAND. And there were also many single strategy models that looked at the impact, for example, on scaling up circumcision or other specific interventions for HIV prevention. But at the time that we embarked on this work, there were no local jurisdiction-specific models that looked at the range of HIV prevention interventions using local epidemiologic data to try and determine what was the optimal combination of interventions to have maximal impact for a given funding level in one city or one state. This type of approach, that is, finding the optimal combination to have maximal impact, is the centerpiece of what is now called high-impact prevention. Oops. So not only was the EACHIP funding novel because it gave us the opportunity to partner with this NYU academic modeling team, but the EACHIP grant itself, likely I think for the first time in CDC's domestic HIV prevention response, was far more prescriptive in identifying the HIV prevention interventions that had the best evidence for reducing HIV incidence. Through EACHIP, the CDC produced an actual list of 24 interventions that were considered either required or recommended for any jurisdiction to have what they consider to be a comprehensive HIV prevention portfolio. And this list included activities such as a routine HIV screening in clinical settings, condom distribution, syringe exchange, but also a much broader set of interventions, such as providing a range of social supports for persons living with HIV. Given that list, we decided to specifically focus this modeling activity on the 24 interventions outlined by EACHIP. So the question became, among these 24 possible interventions, which combination of these activities could maximize the number of HIV infections averted in the jurisdiction for a given level of funding? To say it another way, our goal was to create a jurisdiction-specific operations research model of HIV prevention in New York City. We wanted to account for local complexities and dynamics in transmission and treatment based on New York City epidemiology, to incorporate local cost information and to inform HIV prevention planning in New York City by comparing the cost per infection averted between various HIV prevention strategies, and finally to try and identify an optimal package of HIV prevention. It's important to note that the interventions, as they were enumerated in the EACHIP list, were not really written from a modeler's point of view. And I think CDC and local jurisdictions have learned that to speak modeling is a fine art in and of itself. So that is to say, several of these ECHIP interventions were very broad in focus, and several of them, in fact, were considered to be too broad to be included in the model. In the end, we were able to model 18 of the 24 original ECHIP interventions. Also, as we embarked on this process over time, we learned a good deal about modeling itself, and two questions that we did not really focus on in the beginning of the enterprise have more recently surfaced locally and nationally, as more jurisdictions and our federal partners have embraced this type of evidence-based resource allocation approach. These two questions are how much of each intervention should be pursued to maximize the number of infections averted, so not only which interventions, but how much of each, and also if we could actually end the HIV epidemic in this country, that is to say, if we could reduce the reproductive rate to less than one everywhere, how much in the way of resources or money would actually be needed? And this helps demonstrate the gap between what jurisdictions are receiving or what our federal legislators are allocating for HIV prevention nationally and what it would actually take to reach all of our desired goals. There's another modeler many of you are familiar with named David Holcrave, who has published a good deal in this area about the national amount that would be needed. And that has happened since ECHIP has been launched. So finally, what did we find? Well, I'll just share a few summary points here in the interest of time, and note that the full results of the model have recently been published in PLOS One. First, we found that there were great variations, up to 1,000-fold, in the cost per infection averted for the various interventions. 10 of the interventions prevented new infections at what would be considered favorable value, meaning that their cost per infection averted was less than the lifetime medical cost of someone living with HIV, which recent estimates have placed at around $360,000 a year. The HIV prevention interventions that tended to have the lowest cost per infection averted were those that involved working with individuals who were already living with HIV so that they did not pass HIV on to others. This is sometimes called secondary HIV prevention or prevention with positives. This finding, in fact, has been widely reproduced now in other models that have been developed since the beginning of our work and some of the national models that preceded it. And finally, compared with our base case, this model predicted that an optimized portfolio could avert about a third or 34% of new infections over a 20-year time horizon. So the results from this ECHIP model have impacted our work in New York City and also helped to shift national planning activities on the part of our federal funders. The model results helped to inform an HIV prevention with positives pilot program in 6 large clinical sites that is currently ongoing. It helped to inform an RFP that we released in 2012, and it's helped to guide the development of a social marketing campaign to reach newly diagnosed gay and bisexual men and help them link to and remain in HIV primary care, which is still in development. I think it is also fair to say that this modeling work has also become a catalyst for efforts in other jurisdictions and at the national level. Since this work began, we have seen an interesting partnership develop between CDC and Philadelphia, which Coleman will talk about, to model HIV prevention resources. We've also seen an attempt to create a dashboard coming from the Office of National AIDS Policy in partnership with HHS so that individual jurisdictions could enter some basic epidemiologic information and be able to get some assistance with their local resource allocation decisions. All of these efforts may help contribute to a more evidence-based approach to resource allocation with respect to HIV prevention in the United States. As noted in the beginning, this work helped to inform CDC's current concept of high-impact prevention and also suggests how one grant stream, such as ECHIP, can have a lasting and broad-based sustainable impact. So thank you, and I'll turn it over to Coleman to talk about implementation.
So I'm going to talk about the implementation experience in Philadelphia. And the planning process was actually about a 6-month planning process before we had to have an ECHIP plan done. And in Philadelphia, we came up with a plan that had 22 interventions, 27 goals, 50 strategies, and 74 SMART objectives. That's quite a lot of stuff to get in your mind. And I think that the funding for implementation was important for us because it allowed us to try some new things in Philadelphia that without having to defund other options. And so our ECHIP dollars, we started a major condom initiative focusing on youth. And we implemented some prevention with positive behavioral interventions in Ryan White clinics. That's the main purpose that we used each of funding. But the plan also leveraged other systems and described a process to incrementally shift our behavioral intervention focus system to other approaches. And one of the things we learned in the process of implementing this and really trying to change the prevention system was that at first you have to commit to change and you have to assess all of your resources. And Steve talked about all of the other systems that we didn't normally talk to in HIV prevention, the Ryan White system, the behavioral health system in Philadelphia, our STD control program is a separate program, and we really brought all of that together to commit to change. We refocused other programs, such as our Ryan White medical case management, to increase the focus on retention and increase training, goals, and evaluation on retention and care in Ryan White case management. We integrated our condom distribution efforts with those of the STD control program in Philadelphia, which also already had a strong relationship with the Philadelphia schools through an STD testing program they have had done for years. So we planned incremental and steady change in the shift away from behavioral interventions. And after we had done the plan is when the CDC came in and did resource allocation modeling for Philadelphia, and that really indicated that we really needed, after our first sort of shift in the early plan, we needed to shift the plan again. And so little by little, we shifted things. And having an incremental plan, we staged it and we shifted our CDC funding first and now our state and local funding, which has given us time to engage and inform stakeholders and try to help prepare community-based organizations for changes in HIV prevention services. But I think for me the most important lesson was to use more rapid planning and implementation cycles because, as I said, the CDC came in and did resource allocation modeling in Philadelphia. We saw that the behaviorally based risk counselors we had put in the Ryan White clinics were probably not the best use of the resources, and we've actually switched them and switched the funding stream to make them Ryan White medical case managers and focus on retention and adherence issues. And policy changes are increasingly important. We have seen the policy initiatives as ways to leverage resources and to create sustainability. Examples of policy changes include our work with the Philadelphia schools around condom access in the Philadelphia high schools, and one of the more recent policy changes we did relates to an effort to institutionalize routine HIV screening in healthcare settings. We had started off in EHIP with social marketing to individual physicians, and I'm not sure how far we got with that. And so now we have a policy that we won't fund any organization with Ryan White or prevention funds unless a healthcare organization, unless they have an institution-wide policy for routine HIV screening. And so we basically see that as a way that really will expand our reach and will move towards system sustainability. So I will turn that over to...
Thank you. How do I get my slide? Oh, I see it now. There we go. Okay. Sorry. I'm Tracy Packer. I'm from San Francisco. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm especially happy to talk about EChIP. EChIP has been the story of our lives for the last 3 years, and we're very sorry to see it end. Our funding actually ended September 29th of this year. But I want to point out that EChIP was funding, and as we always spoke about it, it was also a thing. It was a philosophy, it was a movement, and it was a change. So, and I wanted to also just point out that my presentation is really called How to Do More with Less, because now EChIP funding has ended, but the effort and the philosophy and the approach have not gone away. However, how do we sustain them? And that's what I'm going to talk to you about today. So first of all, I want to point out that San Francisco was starting to go in the direction that EChIP took us further, which is to say treatment as prevention, really moving towards implementing the national strategy locally and looking at treatment as prevention. And this was a big shift for San Francisco. We've been very focused on behavioral interventions. So ECHIP allowed us, it gave us some legitimacy to go in this direction, but it also gave us the funding to really bring people together. So we had staff that worked on the left side of this slide, which is to build relationships. And that's where we started. So we built relationships with clinical providers, CDC, of course, and other state agencies, researchers. I want to point out one of our researchers, Milo Santos, is in the audience, and we've worked really closely with Milo to use his research to inform us and have really begun more implementation science in San Francisco, and ECHIP helped us do that. So building the relationships across divisions, across the infamous silos, departments, we were able to build support for treatment as prevention, and that took some time, especially with our community planning body. Oh my gosh. I have 1 minute. We strengthened relationships with HIV Health Services, which oversees the Care Planning Council, and importantly, our clinical providers. On the right is really our outcome. We made structural and systems level change because of the processes that we had put in place. I'm going to give you a couple of success stories. One is HIV testing has increased significantly in San Francisco, the number of tests. We started with a policy which was recommend that people in high prevalence populations get tested every 3 to 6 months and that everyone have one lifetime test. In San Francisco in 2010, we did 17,000 tests in community-based sites, and in 2012, we did 26,000. We will hope to increase that to 30,000. So in closing, I want to say that we've also developed a really strong relationship with the police, which has helped us ensure that we have syringes available. That was not funded by ECHIP. And we've reorganized our entire health department so that we can continue the good work that ECHIP has started. Thank you.